This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you for staying tuned. This is The Morning Run. It is 7:36, Wednesday, the 3rd of August. And no, we are not frustrated minds here on BFM. We're very clear. And in 30 minutes, things will even be clearer on the breakfast grill when we speak to, well, I speak to Venkateswaran Laxmana. He's the sub-regional managing director of Southeast Asia for Geodis. Now, they're one of the world's leaders in the transport and logistics field. Guess what? This company makes 11 billion euro globally last year, and I'm going to be asking him about the challenges of global supply chain shortages, soaring commodity prices, and border closures, and how important is Malaysia to Geodis?
They would be a very good bellwether in terms of how the supply chain is relaxing right in the couple of quarters ahead, whether you see this easing a bit, which can be a good indicator of inflation.
Yes, and I'll also be asking him because they're also a bellwether of overall economy, right?
Yeah.
Because if economy is doing well, then of course more goods are flowing. But if the economy is softening, are they seeing signs of that? So do tune in. That's going to be happening after the 8 a.m. news bulletin. But in the meantime, we're going to be talking about food prices because 2 days ago, a ship carrying Ukrainian grain finally left the port of Odessa for the first time since the start of the Russian invasion. This only happened after Ukraine and Russia signed a UN-backed deal several weeks ago to allow the export of grain from this blockaded Black Sea port. It took 2 months to negotiate this and it's going to last for 120 days and it assures that Russia will not target ports.
While shipments are in transit, while Turkey, supported by the United Nations, will inspect the ships to allay Russian fears of weapons smuggling. For months, the world has seen wheat-based products like bread and pasta become more expensive, while cooking oils and fertilizer also increased in price as Ukraine, a major exporter of these commodities, began to be embroiled in a long-drawn war. While fighting still continues across Ukraine's front line, does this deal represent a glimmer of hope in a worsening global food crisis? And what impact does this have on Asia-Pacific?
For answers, we speak to Priyanka Kishore. She's the head of India and Southeast Asia Economics at Oxford Economics. Now, could you tell us how severe the impact of the blockade of Ukrainian ports since February has been on the supply and prices of food and commodities, especially in Asia?
Hi, morning. It's actually, we have seen that impact play out through two channels, as we've been arguing. One is, of course, the supply channel itself. And in that context, you know, Asia is not as exposed as regions closer to Ukraine, for example, rest of Europe, in terms of its dependence. Of course, you know, we have places like Indonesia and Thailand, which are almost completely dependent on their wheat imports from Ukraine. But as we know, rice is a big staple in Asia, and we have seen switching to kind of compensate for that shortage. On the other hand, the price pressures cannot clearly be avoided. That is a global development. And to just to give you a sense in terms of the region as a whole, food inflation has climbed from less than 1% in February to 5% as of June last month. And early July prints also show continued price pressures.
So as you say, right, with food inflation going up from 1% to 5%, where does this lead to now since that this international broker deal has taken place, right? How do you see this ease food inflation and supply? Do we see this go back down below 5% then?
This is definitely a positive development. Let's keep our fingers crossed that it happens and we do not have any inadvertent developments that kind of leads to a step back on this, and it should help food prices moderate in the second half of the year. Having said that, I'm going to also add caution in the sense that, for example, in Indonesia, we've seen in the latest print that despite, you know, cooking oil prices coming down due to government measures, it is things like chilies and onion which have led to another big inflation increase, and that is more to do with domestic issues and low crop yields. So there's always the weather developments and country-specific factors that need to be taken in. So yes, you'll see a moderation, but the question is really how much lower from here.
Okay, and immediately after the war in Ukraine, many countries started to look intently at food security and, like you mentioned earlier, you know, started to pivot to other sources of grains and commodities, while some actually restricted exports. Do you see this trend continuing in the region? And in the medium term, is it actually effective?
The restriction on exports, no, I would say no, that is not effective, and it is detrimental not only to global food security, but also it impacts the country's own trade dynamics and growth and industries. So as you as yourself seen in Malaysia's case, it was temporary. You are now resuming chicken exports. It was similarly true for Indonesia as well. So these are export bans are definitely something that governments go for as, you know, populist measures. They indicate to the consumer that the government is shielding them, but usually they are not something that you would look to be in place over the medium terms. In terms of switches to grains, that's an interesting one, because typically what you do see is that as economies move up the you know, the value chain, as they go from being developed towards developing towards more developed, you do see that rice yields space to more wheat and wheat-based products. We also see this happening in Asia to a certain extent. But again, I think rice is a cultural staple. It's produced in Asia, and there are reasons to believe that the displacement, as it happens, it will be very slow and incremental. So no, I do think that these habits take many years to change, and not something we can look at over the next two to three years.
And that's why I want to unpack the distinctions in the inflation figures we see, right? Because US and UK really north of 9%, but of course Asian numbers are much lower. Is this a function of the different types of behaviors and commodities that take place, or is there some also element of government effort, right, in here to buffer and put a lid on these prices of commodities?
Yes, I definitely don't want to take away from the government efforts. We have seen cash handouts, we have seen export bans, we have seen directions to retailers in terms of, you know, cap on prices or suggested cap on prices. And of course, higher subsidies going through, which are not that well advertised, but you can definitely see them in the fiscal accounts. But having said that, I think it's also the narrow base of inflation, which in most of Asia, I wouldn't say all of Asia, but most of Asia is still very largely supply-led. That is true for Thailand, for example, where inflation is probably experiencing one of its worst surges. Also true for Philippines. Now, food accounts for a much larger share of the basket, especially for, you know, emerging Southeast Asian economies. But still, you know, it's not something that is being complemented by demand side pressures, which you're probably seeing in the West as well. So core inflation is muted, and that helps.
Okay, but what would be the consequence if commodity and food prices remain elevated? I mean, partially because, like you say, there are some subsidies provided by countries in Asia. So does every country in this area have the fiscal headroom to sustain this, especially when you consider that many countries have taken on more debt to soften the impact from COVID-19?
Yes, that's actually a very important point, and it will become very, very pivotal to, you know, how we talk about inflation if starting right from now, I think, but also more so in 2023, because, of course, you know, if we are saying that inflation is more supply-led and less demand-led, it also means that as growth slows in 2023, Western economies, we talked about US and UK right now, probably see a larger drop in inflation than emerging Asia or Southeast Asia as well. And if commodity prices continue to be elevated, then that drop is even lower. To that extent, I think it's a very country by country analysis that we need to go through here. And of course, I'm not going to go into detail on that. But if I look at the two ends in, for example, in Southeast Asia, one is Singapore, where you actually do have the fiscal space to probably, you know, continue shielding consumption, announce more packages, but have to become more directed, because the region as a whole is targeting fiscal consolidation, as you said, because there is more debt. But on the other hand, if I look at Philippines, I really do not see any fiscal space there for them to actually provide that kind of buffer. So it could get quite worrisome depending upon where you are in the fiscal cycle.
And I guess the million-dollar question for us is, like, because we are really now past 2022, it seems like that's done and dusted for many of us here. What does 2023 look like? You know, what are the levers that will inform us about the volatility or lack of, in terms of food inflation in this part of the region?
Yes, you're quite right. It's really more about 2023. The question is that inflation has peaked, probably close to peaking, if not has peaked, but where does it end in terms of, you know, how low it goes? Does it go back in the central bank's target ranges? So I do think that inflation will come off next year. I don't think that, you know, that is the biggest source of debate. The debate is more about, you know, how much can it come off? And for the countries that, you know, where food inflation account for a larger share of the basket, even as the global issues take a backseat, because we do expect that food prices come off globally as measured by, let's say, the IMF Food Price Index, which largely reflects the situation in Ukraine and Russia. But as I mentioned towards the start, what we do see is that climate changes are increasingly impacting Asian crop yields. And you know, the worst weather outcomes are increasing. We are seeing it in India. We are seeing it in parts of Southeast Asia. And I think that that becomes a growing source of concern. It's not just 2023. It's just going forward even then. So the bigger question is that, you know, as you leave the cyclical headwinds behind, what about the structural food inflation story? And I think we are kind of raising the bottom for food inflation going forward for Asia in that sense.
All right. Thank you for your time. That was Priyanka Kishore, head of India and Southeast Asia Economics at Oxford Economics, giving us her view in terms of where food prices are heading and the reasons actually that we are seeing these elevated prices at this moment.
And she kind of made the point that these export bans don't really work. And I think that's quite evident from what we've seen here in Malaysia, especially with respect to chicken here. And I guess the point here is that though government does play a role in trying to make sure that we can kind of find this buffered away from this inflation price. So the question in 2023 is, will these levels remain elevated in 2022, or do we hope to see it taper off? And the scenario is that if it remains high and elevated, which governments really have the fiscal space to provide that support? And she kind of drew the distinction that some do and some don't.
Yeah, the one that doesn't she highlighted was, of course, Philippines. But even in Malaysia, because we are a net energy exporter, we are somewhat benefiting from the recent prices of commodities. It's still a very painful point. I mean, ours is mainly due to petrol, less so for agriculture or food. But I think it's something we'll be watching very closely. But up next, we'll be speaking to James Chai of ISIS on the recent launch of the Sahabat Kita Demi Negara program, only on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.